Beasley Media Group, BMI, and HD Radio present 100 years of radio, 100 years of hit makers, where we celebrate a century of hits written by some of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Hey, this is Brian Ives. I'm the managing editor of Beasley Media, and I'm hosting a series of interviews with hip-hop's biggest songwriters and producers. We're digging deep, talking about some of their hottest songs. You may not know their names, but you definitely know their hits. This week, we're talking to EY. He co-wrote Meek Mill's song 24/7, and he's also co-written songs for Drake, Chris Brown, and Childish Gambino. So let's just get into it. Yes. Tell me about working with Meek Mill and LMA on 24/7.
It was definitely a fun experience. It was me and my friend OZ, who produced that record and sent it off over to Meek's people, and my other guy Austin, who's a dope producer too from LA. So the way that came about, what was I doing? I was at the crib just trying to get a few ideas together. I was going through some samples on YouTube and just downloading samples just on a random day. I think it could have been a Saturday. And I come across the Beyonce Me, Myself, and I song, which has been playing in my house for years. I've got a younger sister, you know, aunties, cousins that love that song. So, and I thought to myself, has anybody sampled this yet? I tried to find a song and it hasn't been sampled yet, which I was kind of confused. I was like, how has nobody sampled this song? Like, it's such a classic. So I guess I just kind of downloaded it, put it into Fruity Loops and just started chopping it up and trying to just catch, I don't know, just a vibe off of it or whatever. So I didn't kind of put anything down for about a day. And then went back to it the next day and I learned the chords a little bit of the original song. And then once I learned the chords, then I put the chords over the sample chop I had and just started slowly, progressively, like adding drums. And then I sent a video to my boy OZ of the idea I had. And he's like, yo, this is hard. Send it. Let's work on it right now. I said, cool. So I sent OZ over the zip. Then he sent me a video back of the bounce he kind of added to it too, and sped it up a little bit more. And then from there, it just kind of took a life of its own. So yeah, that's kind of like the quick like breakdown of how we made the beat. Like it was pretty dope though. It was pretty dope.
So when you're doing that, I mean, you knew Meek was doing a record. You were doing this specifically with Meek Mill in mind, not just like, hey, here's a good beat.
No. It was definitely with Meek in mind. I'd heard he'd been working on a project and I thought I want to send something over. Just, I don't know. To be honest with you, I wanted to do a song. I don't know. I kind of wanted to just send something over that was melodic, but just had an old school feel. So as I was looking through samples, I found the Beyonce joint and I was like, oh, wait, has this never been sampled before? So yeah. And then I sent that over and from there I was like, okay, this could be a thing. And then when it came out, it was dope to hear what they had done and how they went in together on it. So
when you're writing a song for someone like Meek, obviously there's a budget there, but I mean, it may not be easy to clear a Beyonce sample. Am I right about that?
I would think so, yes. But again, because I was just in that place of just creating, that didn't really hit me until later. I was like, oh, this is okay. Of course, it's definitely a big song, so I wonder what the clearance situation would be. But it managed to go through, and yeah, it worked, and it came out a dope song. So, you know, that's kind of what you want at the end of it, no matter what happens in terms of that business world, come out with a dope record. But yeah, initially you would think, yeah, it'd be a tough one to clear.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, I wanted you to write me a song, but you just put in a really expensive, you know, and possibly difficult to clear sample in that thing.
Yeah. You know what it was? It wasn't even like Meek was asking for a specific type of record to get sent over. I'd been sending stuff and ideas and just dope vibes for a little while anyway. And that was one that they gravitated towards because I guess the feel of the record and how it was chopped, and there were sections of the beat where the sample would just sit alone on its own. So it was really nostalgic, I feel like. So yeah, it came together really amazingly.
And so, you know, when you send it to him and like, they're like, okay, we'll take this, like, then it's out of your hands. Like, do you know LMA is going to be on the track?
No.
Or?
So, no, I didn't know. Once it was sent over and I was told, yo, this is fire. Yeah, no, I didn't hear it. I didn't hear anything of it until it came out. But when it came out, I was definitely happy. Because, again, I only knew LMA was on it, I think, until the day before, I think it was. Because a friend of mine, Nija, she wrote on that song, she wrote LMA's hook. I think she let me know. So, yeah, I only kind of heard the record when it came out. And, yeah, it was super fire. Super happy with how it came out. And Meek killed it, of course.
So, like, literally it drops on wherever it drops, radio, streaming services, download, whatever. Mm. And that's when you hear the thing that you started making, guessing a few months earlier.
I think about a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was about a year and a half. So it was dope. Just that whole experience of going from the idea that was created and me leaving it alone for about a day or two and coming back and then collaborating with a friend of mine and then going back and forth again. And then to hear the song come out a year later is like, yo, like I tell my friends now, yo, that beat was a year old, like, and kind of like the world got to hear it as a whole new thing with, you know, with me, Connor and LMA. Just, yeah, it was incredible. It still is to this day. I'll be hearing it and I'm like, hey, this is, it was fun.
Talk about writing, working on the Omerta song for Drake.
I was never on a path to get into Cambridge. I mean, I was good at doing math, but I'm better with language. Borderline dangerous, approach with caution. I plan to buy your most personal belongings when they up for auction.
That was fun as well. That was really fun. Again, same type of vibe. Did the beat, sent over to my friend, really good friend OZ, who's got a relationship there with Drake. And yeah, Ozzy kind of just hit me and was like, yo, this is being used. Obviously, I weren't sure when or how it was going to come out at first. But then I think a day or 2 days before it came out, we were told it's coming out and it came out. And I couldn't have been more happy, to be fair. Just the sample, the way it sounds, the drums, everything kind of came together amazingly. So, yeah, that was a really wicked experience as well.
And so, I mean, Drake has at least for about 10 years now been arguably the biggest star in hip hop, or at least one of them, and really one of the biggest stars in any kind of music at all. What does it mean for you as a songwriter just to get a track underneath him and get him to put that out?
Bro, it's incredible. It means everything, doesn't it? Like, he is the top artist of our generation and will be for a very long time. So for me, It's amazing. It's definitely a dream come true. I've been wanting to get a song with Drake for a minute. It was crazy. Till this day, I hear it in the shops. Like, I'll be in a store out here called JD. I know you guys don't have it in the US, but it's like Foot Locker. And I heard the song come on, and I was still like, "Yo, what? This is crazy!" Like, I still can't believe it to this day. So, yeah, it's really dope.
I mean, for a long time, his guy was that guy 40.
Yeah.
Noah Shabib. You know, obviously he's gone a little bit outside of him, but it seems like he's got really high standards for, you know, who he works with, because at first he worked with that guy almost all the time. That must be like, all right, we've really got to come with something good for this guy.
No, I don't think. Again, it's not like he was asking me to send over music. I've been sending music through of my friend OZ, who has that relationship, and it's not like I was hit personally, and you know, but even then, I think Drake still does work with 40. I think 40 is still one of his main producers that he works with, and I think everything does go through 40 anyway, to a certain degree. I believe anyway.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. He's 40, he's a legend. He's like, yeah, it's a lot of what's going on in the game right now. It's because of 40, I believe, anyway. He's definitely an inspiration production-wise, so.
So do you get to meet Meek? Do you get to meet Drake after you do these tracks?
I've met Drake before, but it was before Omerta. And I haven't met Meek. Huh. So, yeah. But again, I'm pretty sure that'll come one day if we work again and while just being in LA back and forth, you know. Yeah, of course, that'll come around. That'll come around, but But yeah, it'll be interesting. And if that does, then hopefully the music that's created is, you know, even greater than what we have already. So I'm pretty sure it will be. Yeah.
Talk about Chris Brown to my bed.
No, he ain't gonna make it to my bed. I know he ain't gonna make it to my bed, no.
I mean, when you listen to even to the track without the lyrics, you can tell this is gonna be a sex jam.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was a process. That was a few years ago. Did that with my friends, AO and Keys, who are some dope producers from Atlanta. Me, my friends P2J and Ari went from London to Atlanta and just spent some time in Atlanta with some family friends and just made music out there. And then, how did that process come about? It was just by going to Atlanta a lot and then just by sending stuff over to just various different people and collaborating with producers and writers. And the writer that wrote that, his name was Dimitri, I think it was. Yeah, Dimitri, who's super fire. So it was just a fun process working with that and even seeing the video and everything. Chris dropped a little preview of the song before it came out, like 2 years before it came out. And I woke up to the preview track and I was like, what? No way. I think that was like my first like major placement in the States. One of my first major placements in the States. So that was a moment.
So, I mean, for you, not getting too deep into, you know, like your bank account or your funds or anything like that. But I mean, as a songwriter, when somebody big decides they're going to do your song, there's a lot riding on it for you, especially when you're young. I mean, what is it? And you're just coming out. Like, what does it feel like when you're like, all right, I know he's got this song and I got to pay my rent. Like, I hope he records. Is it like that kind of situation?
No. I mean, at this point, no. I mean, there are obviously coming up as a producer slash writer, you have to work through those phases, right? So, yes, there was a time where I was equating every session I did and every beat I sent to, like, I wanted to monetize off that situation ASAP because I had things I had to take care of. There was a phase of that, but then the phase, I haven't been in that phase for a minute. But I guess you kind of build your way up. You work through those phases and you build your way up through that and, you know, figure out how to handle things and manage things and sort your priorities. And, you know, you get to a point where you're just working on music because you're working on music. You're not trying to, you know, rely on that wholeheartedly and think, oh my God, this song's got to come out because I've got to pay rent next month. Then that type of, I mean, that's a phase though. Some people go through those phases. Some people don't. Luckily I had the grind. It's just the grind. And again, like, you go through that to hopefully make it out if you stick it out long enough.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think anybody, unless they're somehow otherwise wealthy, you know, when you're first getting on, it's like, yeah, this guy's like, oh, I might record it, I might not. And you're thinking your head, like, I got to pay my rent next month. But then it's like, once rent is paid or once mortgage is paid, if you're really lucky, then it's like, yeah, the money will come. I'm not dying for it. Like, it'll get here when it gets here and I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you did, like, I'm not sure if the music industry is the first place you should come into if you're just trying to get rent paid. Like, the priority has to be like, what is it you want to do? What's your passion? You want to make music? Okay, cool. Then you kind of have to make it a priority before it is. It's one of those things, and it's like a leap. So I understand the fear and all of the other stuff that comes with it, but I feel like the ones that do get through that barrier are the ones that kind of take that jump and, you know, do what they got to do.
Sure.
That's what I believe. But yeah, that is a phase for sure.
Yeah, tell me about Childish Gambino's Algorithm. That song, it has like this sort of spooky, ominous tone to it.
That song is incredible. That I love that song. That was my friend Curtis sent me a folder of samples they'd created using a synth that he has, a Prophet synth, and he sent me a few samples and I just went in on, like, I opened the samples up and I said, I'm just going to create freely. I'm going to, like, go around the samples he's created, try a drum pan and just try to create something that doesn't kind of sit in a certain genre. I don't know. I was just kind of just going off of it and not thinking too much. And then I sent it to Curtis. Curtis loved it. And then I sent the beat to DJ Dahi, who's been one of my favorite producers for a minute, and it's a blessing I can call him a friend now. Yeah, sent it to him and he was loving it. I think even Curtis sent it to Dahi, sorry. Yes, Curtis sent it to Dahi. And then me, Dahi and Curtis got in a group text and we started discussing, I guess, ideas what we could do. And then Dahi took the stems and just elevated the whole song from like a beat to just a whole different level. Like played some keys on it, just went in, like just on the production, on even the vocal, like he just did everything. Like just make it, I mean, he just made it sound just it took it to another level. And for me, that the reason I'm saying that is because that song in particular kind of, that was one song that showed me the difference between sitting there and making beats and having the vision and sitting there with the artist and trying to guide that vision as well. And that's what that taught me. And me and Dahi had many moments where we spoke about it. And that moment, that was quite recent as well. I was in LA in January and that was the main thing for me, just being able to create fully sitting around with the artist and guiding the full vision out of the song and just, you know, just, again, we do that out here in the UK a lot, but for me, it's quite different in the US as well.
I'm sure.
So for me, it's just adapting, yeah. But the algorithm was dope. That was a crazy vibe and got to meet Gambino, Donald. Yeah, it was sick. It was sick. Definitely
so
sick.
So that was different for you then, because Donald Glover is actually there, whereas with Drake and Meek and Chris Brown, they weren't.
Well, I was sending the songs to everybody else, to Meek Mill, to Drake, Chris Brown. I was sending the beats over. Again, those relationships weren't direct relationships for me. But as the Gambino one was more, we were close to that. We were there at the studio and we were working, and he would say what he liked and what he thought the vibe was. And Dahi would, again, Dahi executively produced that whole album. So he was actually the one that was around, Gambino a lot. But yeah, it was a great vibe. It was amazing. Still is. I still feel like this is crazy, and you know, it's dope being able to work on like these incredible artists, bro. Like it really is.
I mean, he obviously, Childish Gambino is hip hop, but he also seems to be like in his own genre, like Bjork or somebody like that. You know, he's just so different.
He is. That's exactly what he is. I think that's what's dope. He's able to just go from one to another and bring them together and just, yeah, it's dope. I love it.
Have you been in situations where, you know, you're at a club, you're at a party, you're at a restaurant, you're in a store, and a song that you worked on is being played on the PA, and you see people digging it, and they have no idea they're standing right next to the guy who co-wrote it?
I mean, yeah, of course, yeah. That happens all the time. Yeah, like the example I just gave you in the store when I was out here, it happened, and it's dope. I personally enjoy not being known to that level of degree. Don't get me wrong, to that level of degree where, I don't know, I kind of enjoy it. It's dope because then it's weird. As a producer, I try to see people's reactions to see if they're singing along or if they're enjoying it or if they're bobbing their head or I don't know. That's what I enjoy about it. I've been to shows, concerts, like, and I'm just standing there like, yo, this is fire. But the only thing I can think of is why my synth sounds so loud. It's cool.
And so you're not a guy who's going to try and turn this around and make your own records and stuff like that. You don't want to be in the front.
Maybe. No, I wouldn't say I'd never do it. I might. Maybe. Just right now where I'm at this moment, I don't think that's what I want to do right now. But I'm not opposed to it. No, not at all. It sounds fun. I just don't think right now would probably be the best time just yet. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I might explore that one day.
You want to have a few more hits under your belt?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we'll see. It could be that. It could be. I don't know. It might not be for me. There's a few challenges that I want to knock out in this lane before, sure, I go over to a whole another thing, which requires a whole completely different set of tools. Similar, but just completely different.
So normally when I ask an artist, you know, what do you have coming up? They'll be like, oh, I've got this EP, or I'm doing a track for this movie or whatever. Okay. But with guys like you who are doing tracks for other people, you usually can't say because So I was going to say, is there anything you're working on that you can tell me about?
Oh, man. Is there anything? Not to be that guy, but there actually isn't. That's what's crazy. I wish there was, but there actually isn't, bro. It's been an interesting year, but it's been great. It's been dope. There'll be some dope stuff coming out, like just incredible stuff coming out. Let me not say dope, like actually incredible stuff coming out.
Sure.
That hopefully, yeah, you know, hopefully it's listened to and people enjoy it, really.
Do you remember the first time you ever heard a song that you worked on the radio?
On the radio, yes. I think I do. I remember the first time I played a song that ever came out. On the radio, I think I do. I think I was just getting it in a car. Or was it an Uber? I think I was getting an Uber. And then the song played and I was completely confused. I thought the Uber driver had done it on purpose because he knew who I was.
Right.
But then after like the song had finished or whatever and the song turned out, I'm like, oh wait, this is the radio. He didn't know me at all. So that was kind of cool. I was on my own for a bit and I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is that moment everyone's talking about. All right. It was quite fun. It was fun. It was fun because I got out of the Uber and I was like, oh, that really happened. So yeah.
What was the song?
Bruh, it could have been, what was it again? I think it was a song I did out here, Crept and Conan. It was back in the day. But that was the first one. But I'd say the most surprising was when I heard, I'll be honest with you, the most surprising one was probably when I heard 24/7 be played at Carnival in London. So in London, in London there's a carnival they have every year and over 2 million people show up. So I've gone to Carnival and this is last year actually, and 24/7 played at Carnival for 2 million people, bro.
Wow.
Like, obviously it's not 2 million people at one place, it's big, but it played at the section I was at and people were going crazy.
And that must have been a great feeling.
Yeah, that was a crazy feeling. That was a dope feeling.
So when stuff like that happens, do you kind of feel like I made it, or?
Nah, I don't. Because that's not what I made it is to me. I don't know what I made it is, but it feels dope. It feels dope, but it's a moment, and there'll be many of those. So yeah, it'd be cool. It'd be cool to have another one. You know?
Hey man, I think you're on track to have another one.
Oh man, I hope so, bro. I hope so, bro. Cool. Thank God.
Well. Thank you for giving me the time.
Bro, I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
100 years of radio, 100 years of hit makers.
Thanks to EY for spending time with us. And thank you for listening. Next week, we're talking to 30 Rock. You know him. He co-wrote Roddy Ricch's The Box. We'll see you guys next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.